指数4779.82点，跌幅0.43%。法国巴黎卡克斯零指数3137.20点，跌幅0.82%。英国伦敦金融时报100指数4241.4点，跌幅0.16%。
好，听众朋友，今天汇通天下的内容就是这些。稍后呢，经济之声将会为您送上的是英语之夜，希望您能够继续的锁定。祝您周末愉快，下周同一时间我们再会。
走进英语之夜，感受世界的精彩。
This is English Evening on China Business Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to English Evening. Today is Friday, and I am John. And as some of you already know, Dong Ning is not with us this week, but I think you guys will enjoy it anyway. And so first off, we're going to be looking at a different kind of wedding. And this wedding is going to be done by a Brooklyn couple. And they are going to be the first people on this planet to say I do in zero gravity. And so what they're going to do is they're going to pay about $5,200 for about a 15-minute ride on a Boeing 727 that will give them about 30 seconds of weightlessness, right? And so what it does, what the aircraft does is it goes, it climbs very, very high, and then it goes down, and then it climbs back up again. And so what happens is when it's going back up again, there's so much velocity, there's so much speed, that in fact it feels like you are floating. And so the thing is, like, these two people, they really, really wanted to have their wedding in space or to do it on Mars or something like that. But unfortunately, that kind of stuff, number one, is just a little bit too expensive. Like, going to space is quite expensive just for your average person. And number two, people have not been to Mars yet, right? We have still yet to actually send someone to Mars, so that might be a little bit of a problem, I think. And so what it is these this Brooklyn couple, they are self-confessed sci-fi addicts. One is 31 and the other is 30. They met in 2000 at a science fiction club and began dating in 2002. And so, like, they had been to just so many conventional weddings that they decided that they wanted to do something different. And this is one of those things where, like, it's really exciting and it's just really, really cool. And I think it's really interesting because I feel like more and more people want to break the mold of what a conventional wedding is, you know, because in a lot of ways, tradition really, really is changing. And in the end, people feel like tradition isn't necessarily, you know, doing the job, you might say. It's not something that they want to do anymore. And so, and what we're seeing a lot is just people trying different things, like maybe going to the Caribbean, or, you know, getting married on a cruise ship, or all sorts of different kinds of things. But this is going to be the first time ever that anyone gets married in zero gravity. And so again, this thing is actually quite expensive. Like I said, it's about $5,200 just for one person, right? So that's about a little bit more than $10,000 for this wedding. And the thing is, like, they're not really going to have any guests. Instead, it's basically just going to be the pilots who are flying the plane, as well as the official who will, you know, actually, like, make, like, have them do the ceremony and stuff like that. And so it's one of those things, like, sure, it's really, really expensive, but for these people, the cost is totally, totally worth it. And so instead of, like, having an expensive wedding as well, like an expensive traditional conventional wedding and an expensive honeymoon, they're gonna spend all this money on this very, very unconventional and non-traditional wedding, and just have a very, very low-key honeymoon going to Disney World. And I can imagine a lot of our listeners out there are saying to themselves, wow, that sounds really cool, but I'll probably never do that, you know, because I think in a lot of ways there's still a lot of traditional forces in the Chinese culture, and like a lot of people still want the traditional wedding and stuff like that. But give it, you know, another 20, 30, 40 years, and I think a lot more Chinese people are going to be trying to experiment with these more non-traditional weddings. And it's really interesting because in a lot of ways we're, I think, as a globe, especially, you know, as more countries develop and more countries become more developed, a lot of people are kind of like trying to, you know, break out of tradition and try new things. And rather than, you know, looking towards the past, instead, a lot of people are looking towards the future and how can we be new and how can we be original and different, which I think is really something to be admired. But speaking of weddings, and so I think there's a saying in China where, like, it's every 7 years there's like a big test in the relationship and in the marriage. And a Japanese company has come up with a, in some ways, like a new way to weather like that 7 year storm. And so what they've done is they've made this toy that, even though, for example, maybe, unfortunately, maybe your wife or your children don't really want to listen to you anymore because they're like, oh, you know, whatever. Same thing every day. And so what they've done is this company has made a toy that when you speak to it, it will look as if it's nodding its head. And so this toy is called the Pakapa toy, and it looks like a small plant just starting to sprout from a pot. And so it has like two or three leaves, and it bends its stem as if it was actually reacting to someone who is speaking nearby. And they have already sold about 50,000 of these toys over the last 3 months since it was launched in Japan. And so the cool thing about this, it's kind of like a new communication tool. Like, you know, some people like to write in their diary, some people like have, you know, a recorded diary and stuff like that. But in the end, you know, sometimes we feel like, oh, you know, there's someone or something should be responding or reacting to what I'm saying. And the toy is going for about 2,310 Japanese yen, so that's about $26. And the marketing people from this toy company said that workers could also set the toy on their desks for encouragement as they make sales pitches by telephone, or they're talking to their boss or something like that. Just kind of like one of those little tiny things to help you feel better throughout the day. And they also have a plan to release a flower version for just a little bit more, closer to about $30. The toys use very thin metal wires that can move flexibly like muscles when sensing sound. So this toy will have some kind of speaker in it, and it can tell when something or someone is talking to it. Now, and it's one of those things, like, in the end, to me, this isn't necessarily a good thing, because instead of encouraging like actual communication with real people, it encourages people to become more isolated and more alienated, which I think in the end is actually quite a bad thing. Because, you know, studies have shown that actually the more social someone is and the more face time they have with other people interacting and communicating, actually the happier they will be. And so something like this, although it is a good short-term solution to a prevalent problem, I think, that a lot of people have these days, in the end, it really does not actually address what the real problem is. Instead, it just kind of, you know, encourages people to stay in kind of like a antisocial or alienated kind of personal space. And so speaking of human interaction, recently a survey has been done where they looked at European holiday plans, right? So people wanting to go on holiday and traveling across Europe or, you know, traveling across the world. And it seems that because of this, you know, economic crisis and the credit crunch and the financial tsunami or what have you, fewer and fewer Europeans are actually planning to head away this summer on holiday. But it's actually kind of funny because the credit crisis actually has done very little to impact the Italians' appetite for vacation. And so these results are coming from a survey which showed that the number of Europeans planning to leave home for a holiday dropped nearly 3 percentage points to 64% this year from 2008, with the French cutting back the most. And so what they did was this survey was done by a polling agency, and they contacted about 3,500 people in seven different countries. Budget-wise, British tourists, also hit by a decline in the exchange rate of the pound, expect spending to fall considerably more than holidayers in other countries. And this poll was done between February 16th and March 27th. Now, it's really interesting. So what they did, they found that Italians actually topped this vacation table with 76% planning a break away this summer, only down 1 point from last year. Whereas in England, the decline was about 14%, more than twice as much as those with between France and Spain, which was only down 6%. And so the average vacation budget in Europe right now is about 2,066 euros across the country survey. And so yeah, it's actually kind of interesting. And for the English, I think it makes a lot of sense. Because in the end, like, because of this credit crisis, you know, they were in some ways most affected, because right now England really does not produce very much. They don't export very much. Instead, they actually import quite a bit. And most of their contribution to the global economy is in financial services like banking, investment, mutual funds, and so on and so on. And so it makes sense that not only will the exchange rate for them go down, right? We're looking at right now, I think last year, when I came to China last year, the exchange rate was about 1 pound was 14 renminbi, but now it's only 10 renminbi per pound. And so that's actually quite a big drop. And so, you know, the fact that British people are tending to spend less on vacation, again, makes a lot of sense. And it's actually funny, I was talking with someone yesterday about this phenomenon, about the devaluing of the British pound, and they were telling me that quite a few Chinese people, when the pound first started to decline, a lot of them actually went to England because things were just so much cheaper, right? Because you think about it, like Gucci, Armani, you know, LV, and all sorts of things are actually quite expensive in China, whereas if you go to England or go to other countries, it's going to be a little bit cheaper. And so I thought that was a little bit interesting. And so what's been happening is there was a switch. So while the pound was quite strong, a lot of English people were going out and traveling and going to different countries. But now that the English pound has devalued and is a little bit weaker, more and more people are actually going to England. But yeah, just in general, it seems like this is actually one of the best times to go traveling, you know, because in the end, a lot of things are going to be cheaper. I mean, especially, you know, airplane tickets, man. I mean, it's one of those things, like, people are really worried about this economic crisis and stuff like that, but I'll tell you what, plane tickets are a lot cheaper than they were even, you know, a year ago, and it's really kind of crazy. Like, looking a year ago, a flight from L.A. to Beijing was about, what, maybe $900 to $1,000, but recently you're looking at anywhere from $700 to $800, which, you know, it's only like a $200, $300 difference, but for a lot of people that makes all the difference. And so again, like, summer, as we all know, is one of the best times to travel. You know, all the kids are out of school and they're on the break, and so it's like, well, what can we do now? And so tourism is always a good idea. All right, and so now it's time for business. 下面我们来听财经资讯。 Bank of England governor says economy is starting to stabilize. The Bank of England governor, Mervyn King, said recently that there are some signs that the British economy is beginning to stabilize, although the path to full recovery could be protracted. In a speech delivered to industry leaders at a dinner in the British capital, King said that there are certainly grounds for believing that the rapid falls in activity are coming to an end, and the likelihood of a recovery sometime this year was supported by some signs. He also said that there were tentative signs that the Bank of England's quantitative easing program, that is, buying up assets with newly created funds to expand the money supply, was having beneficial effects. Other positive factors for the UK economic recovery were the lower British pound, which would encourage a switch in spending to British goods, and the enormous policy stimulus that has been injected into the economy. Okay, and that was Biz News, and now it's time for Studio Classroom.
Welcome to Studio Classroom Worldwide. My name is Steve. Thanks for taking time out of your day to join us. Have you ever wanted to study abroad? If you haven't, maybe you know someone who does or did study abroad. Studying overseas is a great way to learn about the world and appreciate different cultures. But, as we'll see over these next 2 days, there are those who think studying abroad isn't such a good idea. So, in today's Viewpoints lesson, we'll be discussing the advantages and disadvantages of studying overseas. Let's look at that word advantageous. Advantageous, as in Tom realized the advantageous effects of exercise after he lost 5 kilograms in 1 week. Our next key word is the noun acquisition. The president hoped to increase his company's profits through the acquisition of a small business. Okay, now please open your magazines to page 52 and follow as we read.
Studying abroad. Is studying in another country really a good idea? Each year, students around the world leave behind the comforts of home to pursue a study abroad experience in a foreign country. While many would say that studying abroad is advantageous, some would argue otherwise. Conversation A.
Have you been in the student union lately? At lunchtime today, I heard French, Arabic, Chinese, and a few languages I didn't even recognize.
I know. It seems like our university gets more international students every year. But to be honest, I don't know if I see the benefits of studying in another country.
What? There are plenty of them. The most obvious is second language acquisition. Where better to practice another language than in a country where it's spoken?
Hello, friends. I'm Esther.
And I'm Rachel. We're glad you joined us for our Viewpoints lesson. We want to know what you think about studying abroad and whether studying in another country is a good idea or not.
Each year, thousands of students go to a different country, and they study abroad. But when they do this, they leave behind the comforts of home to pursue a study abroad experience in a different foreign country. Now, first, we have a phrase here, the comforts of home. If something is a comfort, it means it's very comfortable. You feel relaxed, you're familiar with it, and you enjoy it. So what are some of the comforts of home, Rachel?
Well, obviously having your family around and your own things and your own room and people who love you and support you, even people who speak the same language. There are many comforts of home. You study in a foreign country, you leave that. We might say you leave your comfort zone and you go to a totally new place. And while many would say that studying abroad is advantageous, some would argue otherwise. Now, Esther, what does it mean if something is advantageous?
Well, if something is advantageous, it means there are many advantages or benefits. If you do something that is advantageous for you, well, you do it because it's good for you and lots of good benefits you can get from it. So let's go into our conversation and see what Adam and Beth have to say about studying abroad.
Yes, they're going to bring up some very different points, and they're going to talk about whether it's advantageous or beneficial to actually study abroad. And so Adam starts out with a question. He asks Beth, have you been in the student union lately? Now, Esther, what's student union?
Well, in many colleges and universities, there's one building where there's a cafeteria or different restaurants, and often many clubs will have their offices here. So that's what we call the student union building. So Adam is asking Beth if she's been there, and he's saying, at lunchtime one day, I heard French, Arabic, Chinese, and a few languages I didn't even recognize. So there's lots of students from around the world, and at the student union building, they're speaking in many different languages.
And Beth agrees. She says, I know. It seems like our university gets more international students every year. I think many universities around the world have a good amount of international students. But what's interesting is Beth doesn't know if it's such a good idea. She says, but to be honest, I don't know if I see the benefits of studying in another country. So this is going to lead into a good discussion that they're going to have about studying abroad.
Right, and since it's our Viewpoints article, Adam and Beth are going to have different opinions about whether studying abroad, studying in another country, is a good idea or not. So what does Adam say?
He says, what? He's kind of surprised that she would say such a thing. He says, there are plenty of them. There are plenty of benefits for studying abroad. The most obvious is second language acquisition. Now, we are going to stop on that for a minute. I think you know what a second language is. It means another language that you can speak. But what about that word acquisition? What does that mean, Esther?
Well, acquisition means you acquire something. It comes from the verb acquire, A-C-Q-U-I-R-E, and it means you get something. So it means you're learning and you're getting knowledge. So second language acquisition is learning a second language. It's getting knowledge and learning how to communicate in a different language that's not your native language.
I think many students are concerned about acquiring another language. They want second language acquisition, and that is one of the biggest reasons that people go abroad to study, because where better to practice another language than in a country where it's spoken. A lot of times, Esther, they say if you want to learn a language, you do have to go to the country, and we use the word immerse. Immerse yourself in it. In other words, you just jump right in and you use it, the language, whether it's English or something else, as much as possible.
Right, and you really have to become part of that culture in order to be able to learn that language.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking about studying overseas, the pros and cons of studying abroad. In conversation A, Adam makes a great point. If you want to learn a second language, one of the best ways to do that is to study in a country where that language is spoken. But Beth isn't so sure studying overseas is a great idea. We'll learn why after we look at two more keywords. The first is proficient, as in, Julie decided not to study in Canada because she doesn't think she is proficient in English. The second is the adverb accordingly. When we visit the CEO's office, we all have to dress accordingly. Okay, let's resume the reading. We're on the same page, but now we begin with a statement from Beth, starting on line 19.
Studying abroad.
It's one thing to practice a language, but it's another to study in it. If students aren't proficient in English when they arrive, they may experience academic challenges until their language skills improve. What happens if a student has difficulty understanding a teacher when he or she is speaking? How will the student be able to succeed?
Well, it is true that international students do have to adjust to life and learning in a new country. But most universities do their best to accommodate them accordingly. Some universities require international students to take ESL programs before they enroll in the school.
So Adam's question was, where better to practice another language than in a country where it's spoken? And notice Beth's response. She says, well, it's one thing to practice a language, but it's another to study in it. Now, that's an interesting sentence structure.
So Beth continues and she says, if students aren't proficient in English when they arrive, they may experience academic challenges until their language skills improve. Now, in this sentence, we have a very important word. It's one of our word bank words, and the word is proficient. If you are proficient in a subject or a skill, it means you are very skillful at something you have learned. It's not something you knew beforehand. It's something you have learned. So we talk about being proficient in English, in math, maybe you play an instrument, maybe you're a proficient pianist.
Right. So there are many things you can be proficient in, but if you're not proficient in the language of the culture where you want to live, that might be a challenge for you. And I think that's Beth's point. What happens if the student has difficulty understanding a teacher when he or she is speaking? This is a real concern for many people, especially when they consider going to America to study and they don't speak great English. They think, how can I get by if my English is not proficient?
And Beth continues to ask the question, how will the student be able to succeed? So she thinks that, well, if the student doesn't understand what the teacher is saying or doesn't completely understand, how will the student succeed in school? How will the student be able to do well in school? She doesn't really think it's possible at this point.
And notice Adam's response. He says, well, it is true that international students do have to adjust to life and learning in a new country. We might say there's a big adjustment period. When you go to a new country, you have to adjust or accommodate or get used to the new country. And sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes it takes months, and some people don't even adjust after a few years. It depends how much time you're willing to put into that adjustment period.
And I think it often has to do with students and their different personalities. But Adam continues and he says, but most universities do their best to accommodate them accordingly. Now, earlier, Rachel defined this word accommodate. To accommodate someone or something, it means that you learn to live with that person or that thing. And they accommodate them accordingly. Accordingly means in a particular situation, they do what is right and what is best.
Right. So if a person needs something in particular, maybe to make them feel at home in this new culture, many universities will try to accommodate them. And often then we use the noun form of that word as well, accommodations. And that means they provide things, accommodations, for these students. And I know, Esther, a lot of them have even their own special clubs, and families in the community will spend time with the international students. Many schools do a lot of things to make them feel at home.
Right. Many schools will go out of their way to help these students feel like even though they're in a second country, they are not missing too many comforts of home. They try to provide sometimes special meals or celebrate their national holidays. And often there's even a special center where these university students can go and meet other international students as well.
Exactly. And there are a few requirements that international students often have to meet. And some universities require these students to take ESL programs before they enroll in the school. So I think if they're learning English and they've taken the programs and they pass the tests, they'll be fine in a new culture. Let's quickly look at that word ESL. That means English as a second language. And I know ESL programs are quite popular now, and many times you have to take them before you even enroll in a particular school.
So, Beth has some concerns that international students don't always have the necessary language skills to adjust to life in their new environment. Friends, we'll have the second day of our lesson studying abroad tomorrow. Until that time, all of us here at Studio Classroom Worldwide hope You have a great day. Bye-bye, everyone.
本节目由吉林省空中英语教室杂志社提供，也可登录相关网站收听当日广播教学节目。本节目配套杂志播讲 MP3 在全国各大书店有售，并可在当地邮局订阅。
And that was Studio Classroom.